At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, coming to you from Keeneland. Now just really 2.5 days away from Breeders' Cup. We're also 2.5 days away from the start of the fall-winter season at the Big A. Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Good, good. If I wasn't going to be at Keeneland, I'd want to be at Aqueduct Friday.
Big news.
You always like you like getting back over to the Big A.
I do. I thought we were talking about you.
No. I'm talking. It was a way for you to riff on the return to Ozone Park.
Oh, I missed that. I missed my cue. I'm a little slow this morning. I'm happy to get back to Aqueduct. I love the Big A.
Yeah. I'll be down there, soon enough. A couple of quick thoughts, Andy, too, about before we riff on a few topics, including Cup. The Belmont season was strong.
Yeah. Well, the weather cooperated until the last few weeks, but the racing was good, and the numbers were strong. Yeah, we continued to things are going well. It's good.
And obviously, we talked to Joe Applebaum when the news came as the winter season was introduced, and with the immediate purse hike, and there's a lot of good things after a period of uncertainty. There are a lot of good things ahead for the late fall and into the winter. So obviously,
that's always a good time of the year. I mean, the racing will be very good at Aqueduct. As long as the weather cooperates, the racing will be very strong at Aqueduct. I'm confident of that. And I think that's always, that's always the biggest factor at this point, whether or not the weather can hold up. But it looks good so far for the first couple of weeks. And, the racing is, I'm sure a lot of people will remember last year, we had terrific racing to start out at Aqueduct. I mean, fall meet was sensational. I would argue that it was some of the strongest racing that we really had all year. I can't think of a meet that was really considerably more competitive. And, we were running 10 race cars almost every day, which is always going to be a function of, how good the racing is. They're certainly directly related, and the racing was great last year. You see a lot of good two-year-olds. Even in normal years, you see a lot of good two-year-olds. And this year, with the pandemic, things kind of were a little slower maybe than they've been to get going in the past. And so I think there's no reason to believe that we won't have really strong two-year-old racing at Aqueduct and both turf courses. So weather permitting, I think we can look forward to another really strong 5 weeks of racing up to the Cigar Mile, if not beyond that. The purses are good, so hopefully the winter will be good as well.
Well, and just looking ahead to Friday, the Atlantic Beach for the two-year-olds, the Tempted as well. And then on Saturday, card that'll, keep people occupied along with Breeders' Cup, the Stewart Manor for the two-year-olds, turf sprinting, and the Turn Back the Alarm, the grade three for the fillies and mares.
Always a big race for you, the Turn Back the Alarm. Do you remember who trained Turn Back the Alarm?
Oh, no.
Really? Red Carroll.
Oh, nice. I like it.
Good job. Good horse.
Yeah. Is the Nashua this weekend too?
Nashua is Sunday.
Sunday.
And one of the reasons I think we've always run the Nashua on the Sunday of Breeders' Cup weekend was to give the jocks an opportunity to get back from the Breeders' Cup. And obviously it's a different situation this year because of COVID, but that's been the sort of the plan in past years. Obviously not going to work out the same way this year because of they can't ride right away. I guess there's a rule where it's a few days, right? I think it's a state rule now, right? At this point, it was changed yesterday, maybe, where you have to get a COVID test a few days before coming back or something. It's hard to keep track, but regardless, yes, that will be Sunday.
Well, draw for Saturday tomorrow, and it's one of the things that when you fold wherever the Breeders' Cup is going to be run, there's always very regularly there's good racing that on any of these big weekends. You know, the other ovals support strong cards, so we'll look forward to that. And Andy, I should even mention the closeout on Sunday. Took a swing at
what a glorious day that was.
Yeah, boy, what a crazy.
Terrible. That's the close out to me.
Yeah. But the pick six force out, and it was tricky. That was a tricky sequence.
Too tough for me.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Made a couple of fun.
I didn't play. I couldn't see a doorway to play that thing responsibly for a short amount of money.
Yep.
I'm glad to see that it came close to chalking out at least. You know, I always like to see smaller players at least have a chance to win those things. I hate when they're too tough and, you know, the people, the bet is built on them. I mean, it's not a bet I like or I endorse in any manner, but I hate to see when, you know, it's sort of built on the backs of smaller players and they sort of end up getting the short end of the stick when it's just, you know, sort of one impossible result after another.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's always disappointing. And so at least in this case, it was manageable, I think. I'm not going to in any way suggest it was easy, but I think it was manageable for people for a slightly smaller bankroll. So.
Completely agree.
Some people played it okay.
Yeah, yeah, 3,700, and you know the horses that personally that tripped me up. Barley won, but Barley won was absolutely a horse that
was one of five or six you would have used. But
yep.
You know, I think as it turned out, the places you would have narrowed down, you could have done okay. I didn't really like On Her Way. I guess it would have been a third or fourth use for me, but it would have been hard for me to get there because like. That would be on the races. I would have stood with the bottom two horses, neither of whom really ran a step. But that's probably what I would have done in those, and that's why I would have gotten tripped up. So in my case, it was a good thing I didn't play. I didn't play because I didn't really feel like I had much chance to win it. And I think that proved to be correct.
Yeah, and the even the well, I singled Chad's horse, that Ingracia, who
won by a nose. So
won by a nose, but. I thought was pretty darn good after being bottled up.
Well, I don't know. I mean, she ran fine. So the second one. So I don't think either one of them ran particularly better than the other one. She also, in being bottled up, she also saved ground and was patiently ridden. So I don't think she had a bad trip in there. I think that she is probably the best horse. It was close between her and the second runner.
Fluffy socks. And then the winner in the nightcap was a, you know, certainly
one of four or five you sort of had to use.
Yep. Miss Jimmy.
That horse is actually a pretty cool horse. I mean, that horse is a, you know, if you look through that horse's career, I mean, he's kind of amazing, right? I think she is. I think that's like the 13th out of 15 times that she's been first or second, right?
Yep. The wind machine.
Yeah, she's got a neat record, and I like her. How can you not like her?
Well, it was very, and you know, I'm sure some people. I don't know if they noticed it, but I was pleased that Mike Luzzi got out with a win to end the meet.
Sure, I think a lot of people noticed that Luzzi won.
Good.
Luzzi is a popular guy.
Yeah.
To know Luzzi is to like Luzzi.
Agreed. Well, Andy, we'll look forward. We got all winter to look forward to. Let's talk a little bit, and everybody looks forward to your videos when it comes to Breeders' Cup. No, they do. Believe me. People, I get emails. Is Andy doing his videos this year? Believe me.
Those people need a hobby.
They do. They're following you. It seems like it's a full-time job for some people.
Hey, I read on the internet the other day that I make over $500,000 a year. Somebody had read it on Twitter.
You're worth every penny.
I'm hoping the guy's willing to make up the difference. Greg Lukowski texted me. He said, congratulations. I see you're making over $500,000 a year. I love the idea of being able to guess your income. So anybody cares anyway, but they're either wildly low or wildly high, right?
You're making me laugh.
What would we laugh at if we didn't have the internet?
I know. What did we do? What did we do before? I don't remember. Source of great amusement. Well, let's get, I'm not going to pin you down to, tons of opinions, but I would like some, I'd like some impressions.
You can try to pin me down. I'm not going to respond, but go ahead. Have at it.
Well,
I
frequently, when it comes to Breeders' Cup, I frequently, want to hear first your turf racing opinions, because you've got a very good feel for the quality of the Euros that come over and also how they're going to respond, what their motivations are many years in coming. I remember you being the first person to sort of float the idea that this, some of these trials was an afterthought. You're the first person I remember, saying, they're sending this horse over because they want firm turf. I mean, there's a lot of things about your approach.
I don't think I'm the first person to say that. Maybe the first person you spoke to that said that.
But that could be, yeah.
I mean, I think I don't think it's any different than any sort of logical exercise you're supposed to do as a handicapper, right? You're supposed to guess. I mean, why? I mean, there's two main reasons. In general, I think that there's three that they come here. One, of course, is that people buy them because they think it's good value and they can do well with them. But, when you see European connections ship and they're not private purchases, it can be just keeping, sort of easier spots. And that's certainly going to be the case sometimes. But obviously, one is that they're seeking more opportunities to run firm ground, but also a feeling that they may need Lasix. So, you have to sort of decipher that. I don't think you're going to see that in the Breeders' Cup. Those aren't necessarily firmer ground or Lasix. But, I mean, one of the things I've had success with in past years in some of the races, especially with the older horses, is that you want horses that are being pointed for these races, mm-hmm. especially by good trainers, as opposed to horses that are coming here as afterthoughts. I don't think anybody needs to look any further than Aidan O'Brien's record in North America in general and the Breeders' Cup to realize that, in general, most of the stuff, the times that Coolmore comes over, afterthoughts. Now, that doesn't mean they always are. And just because, by the way, they're not afterthoughts doesn't mean the horses win. But he is 0-for-60-plus in North America in his last 60-plus starters. I think his last winner was Found. Was it Found? No, it wasn't Found. We talked about who his last winner was 60-something starts ago. But he's maybe that was the Breeders' Cup his last one was done, but or Highland Reel. It was Highland Reel. He's 7-for-100. He's 6-for-128 now. He was 7-for-131, and then 4 days later, because we got through a Breeders' Cup in the 5-year window, he was 6-for-128 shipping over here. So yeah, downgrading his horses has been an effective style. And I think that's, one of the things with Magical. Is she going to come over here and run a race? Obviously, if Magical, if she runs her A race, she's probably going to win this race. She seems to run it much more often than not. Perhaps the boggy conditions in English Champions Day really prevented her from doing her best running. But I also think they prevented Lord Nelson from doing his best running, and maybe he's a little more interesting. I didn't see this year a lot of Euros that were sort of under the radar, grade 3 to grade 2 types that were coming here that were pointing for the Breeders' Cup and coming here for a peak effort. So I'm not sure we have any of those horses. We've had them in the past. And they're able to upset some often better horses that are a little more over the top. But I do think the Euros are kind of strong this year. First of all, our it's no secret that our marathon or, you know, mile and a half type, mile and three eighths or mile and a half type older horses are an incredibly weak lot this year. You know, I don't want to be overly dismissive of, you know, the Channel Makers. He's a very cool horse, but he's coming up with two dream setups on courses with enormous amounts of give on him. Unfortunately, that doesn't appear like it'll be the case at Keeneland. And, you know, and I mean, Knighted's a really nice horse, but, you know, he's not likely to be particularly effective against reasonably talented Europeans. You know, there's a terrible morning lines in these races, and it does seem like the morning line maker, if he's going to take on that responsibility in the Breeders' Cup, and I don't even know it is, should spend a little more time looking at the Euros. But to have a horse like Tanawi, you know, what is it? What's the horse?
Tarnawa.
To have that horse 6-1 in Channel Maker and Arklow, and I understand the morning line maker seems to have an affinity for horses that ran in Kentucky, something they probably shouldn't do either. To make them 5-1, Tanawi 6-1 is laughable to anybody that's paying any attention to the races. There's no way that they're going to be shorter prices than she is. So, you know, I think there might, you know, we'll see if there are opportunities. I don't know. With the 2-year-old, the colts, I think there's a couple of decent colts in the turf because they can't run the group ones over in Europe. Geldings, Go Athletico and New Mandate, two geldings that, you know, they came over here because they couldn't run the group ones there. And Go Athletico, I mean, he didn't draw well. He drew post 12, but, you know, Sealy Way, he had that huge win on the super boggy course on Arc Day. Well, when he finished a length behind Go Athletico on a much firmer course at Longchamp a month earlier, people should watch that race. Go Athletico may have beaten him by a length, but he beat him like a drum. So he's probably the better horse. Still the way through much better, so maybe that'll help make up the gap. But on the other hand, still always coming off that big win, whereas because Go Athletico's a gelding, this is really the race he's been pointing for. And I think he's a very dangerous player. I think New Mandate's also a dangerous player. And this might be an unusual year. Not unusual, but I think that the Americans in this race are not very strong. I'm not going to be shocked if horses like Public Sector or Gretzky the Grave, and maybe if they're effective in here, and to a lesser extent, Mutasa Beck, though I thought Abarta, who finished behind him, was really every bit as dangerous as Mutaka Beck, and maybe, you know, better price. So I prefer him at a better price. I don't think Rescue Rage is bad. But he's no Tiger. You know, Pirate Will had a perfect setup last time, but he's not bad. That was about it. I mean, I really didn't have a strong feeling that any of our horses were that good. So I think the Euros will do better in this race than they normally do. I know they've had much more success against the fillies in the past. But, you know, Aunt Pearl and Plum Alley in the Breeders' Cup Philly turf, they're okay. But so is Campanelle, though I don't know that she's necessarily going to be better going the 1 mile. We'll see. And she's obviously very talented. And I think even horses like Udnadada, mm-hmm. She's a dangerous horse coming up that third and where she ran okay. And Miss Amulet. I mean, I think Miss Amulet's pretty good. And she's one that I think probably, you know, could have questions with the distance. I think that's one of the problems with Miss Amulet. Is she really going to be effective going a mile? I'm a little skeptical of that as well. I know a lot of people, you know, like Battleground, the 2-year-old race. But once again, in the colt race, it's Aidan O'Brien. I'm just, you know, you're one of two people that told me that she'd run well because her dad won the Breeders' Cup on the turf at Keeneland. I want to just share that with your listeners so they know what a lunatic you are. I never heard that angle. You and Ryan Martin, bred to win the turf at Keeneland. That's a new one. Keep that one in mind.
It's a very different turf course. It's sand-based. And I've tried
this year than the last 3 years stuff, Steve, where they were running a few days after the meet ended.
Right.
Torn to shreds. And at least half of the horses, European and American, didn't handle it at all. Whereas this year, it's about 3 weeks since they run on it, and the weather, as you know, is going to get very warm this week. So I think we're going to deal with a very different turf course than we dealt with last time.
No, of course, looks fabulous.
Well, looks can be deceiving. Do they paint it?
No, that no, they, that's,
that
a, that's a
state, for
that's a South Florida stunt.
I like that. That should be like a shirt. There should be a giveaway. South Florida stunt. Seen quite a few of those over the last few decades.
Give us a couple of thoughts, Andy, about some of the extreme potential events and, you know, the sprints, the Philly Mare sprint and the main, you know, the 6-furlong sprint. Certainly the Philly and Mare is exciting.
I mean, the Philly and Mare sprints, like the distaff, is very top heavy. I mean, Terragetti Empress and Gamine are sort of the two by a lot. Much like Monomoy Girl and Swiss Skydiver, the two who aren't trying to beat them, fine. I think it's probably more likely that somebody upsets those two in the distaff than upsets those two in the sprint. I thought that the fringe players in the sprint were probably Speech and Bell's the one, whereas the distaff, maybe they're Ollie's Candy and Neurologist. Neurologist is sort of an interesting horse because she really does seem to be coming along for Bill Mott. And her win the Beldame, in my opinion, is better than some will give it credit for because she was really sort of in a chasing factor against that runoff. And she looked in the turn like maybe she had had enough, but she just kept on coming. Neurologist is an interesting improving horse for Bill Mott. He's looking to win this race for a sixth time. It's pretty incredible. If you think about
it. It is. And they supplemented.
Yeah, she was supplemented the race. Never a good equity bet, even if you win. Or rarely, I should say.
Andy, how about a couple of got to get a classic opinion in, and then one or two.
I don't have a classic opinion. I haven't come close to finishing that race.
All right.
Classic is a very entertaining race. I am disputing anybody that's declaring it, one of the all-time great classics. I think that's a load of crap. I think it's a very competitive classic, but I think we've had many classics with many better horses than this one. This is a nice bunch, but let's not confuse it with some of the kind of horses we've seen in past years. The major players are improbable. Is the law. I guess Tom's Detat and Maximum Security. I'm not an authentic fan. If he wins this race, I'll lose. I respect him. He's obviously been pretty good. But I believe that Tislaw will beat him today. And Tislaw was forced to play authentic game in the Derby. And he's not going to have to play his game in this race. So I do think he'll beat him. Now, whether or not it means he's good enough, I don't know. I wish the Global Campaign was good enough. Like I said, I'm not done, so I'm not dismissing him. And I'm not enamored with Maximum Security, whose last race did very little for me. And in my opinion, he's a horse that's thrived over perfect circumstance. And I don't see him getting absolutely perfect circumstance in this race with other speeds and other talented horses. I don't have any argument that a probable horse to be wild cards Tom Detat. I don't know exactly what to do with him. Obviously, he runs his Foster. He's going to be very tough. I don't have any confidence he's going to run the Foster. I hope he does for Al. I've always liked this horse. Pretty good run, right? Got 9 straight triple-digit buyers. But I think it would be a mistake for people to be overly dismissive of Tis the Law. I think he's a big-time player in this race.
Drew down inside. Andy, give us, before we go, give us maybe a price that you're going to bet.
I cannot commit. I haven't made final picks in these races, and I'm taping those videos, and I don't want to come on your show and tell you I'm betting some horse, and then people look at my videos and see the horse pick third or fourth. So I'm sorry. I'm just not done. I'm done most of the work. I just haven't put together all the picks.
I hear you.
It's a fun 2 days of betting. There's no question about it. But I would offer that unless you've done the work, it's not easy. These races are tough. They're tricky. And doing the work doesn't guarantee any winners, but doing no work is probably a guarantee of failure. So we wait for all year. The Breeders' Cup's had an enormous deleterious effect on major racing throughout the country throughout the year. And that's a real negative. the positive is that Breeders' Cup weekend is a fun weekend of racing. So we've seen a lot of our big races destroyed throughout the year. So since we have to suffer through that, we might as well enjoy the result of that, being that the horses do come together in the Breeders' Cup. So I do enjoy the Breeders' Cup races. My overall view of their effect on racing is a very different one. I don't think that racing is better because of the Breeders' Cup. That doesn't mean I don't enjoy Breeders' Cup weekend.
Yeah,
you know, I think it's unfortunate. It's a discussion that's never really been given an opportunity to be had. And I think it's an important discussion. Has it been good for racing? I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with me and say it has. And I could give reasons it has been good for racing, but I think it's fair to say we give reasons it hasn't. Is that unfair?
It is. It is. It is.
It's unfair or fair?
I've got a kind of a multitude of reactions, and there's been certain developments that have actually been very good for the game domestically. The introduction of the juvenile turf events that was originally thought of as a pandering maneuver for, you know, Euro interests has really been good for our game. It's broadened some breeding prospects.
Has it?
Yeah, it has. It has
broadened the breeding prospects.
Bricks and Mortar
was sold to Japan because that's the only place they could find a reasonable stud deal.
Well, Bricks and Mortar. This is a whole involved discussion, but Bricks and Mortar, sort of like, well, no doubt, but there's horses that are getting chances at stud that, you know, that are going to probably, you know, be tilted toward turf.
I think what could change that going forward is not a Breeders' Cup thing. Now, maybe you could argue that one of the reasons, and I like those races, I agree, and I do agree with you, Steve, that they were good additions. I'm not trying to say I don't, because I do. But I think, you know, when Chad Brown and Peter Grant went to Tattersall 2 years ago, and Peter and Seth Carman bought a number of horses, and Peter had to marshal the A, and Seth had newspaper record, and digital age was a factor in the term. I think that really is that was the change. That wasn't the Breeders' Cup.
That's fair.
Now,
that's fair, too.
Maybe some of the reason they went was because the Breeders' Cup, that's fair. I think that's fair to include that discussion, but that was the event. That was the catalyst because, you know, we're running turf races now in New York, made races where we've got 3-4 horses bought over at Tattersall or European sales.
Right.
I don't think that happens if Chad doesn't go over there 2 years ago. And that's the evolution. And I think because we're introducing the Luke de Vegas and the Kingmans and, you know, some other European sires into our bloodstream, I think that might eventually lead to us seeing some of these horses standing at stud in America. But, you know, don't forget, and I applaud Pazic Tipton for trying this a few years ago.
Right, they tried that sale.
For turf sale. But on the other hand, I know you got to go. But on the other hand, it was an abject failure. That doesn't mean it's not going to be successful in the future. You've got to fail to succeed. They were just a little ahead of their time. Discussion. We'll have another time.
It's a great discussion. I agree.
Yeah, well,
Andy Serling, everybody, and look for Andy's at Naira.com. And look for Andy's terrific, always, videos. You may not agree with his ultimate decisions and opinions, but he will tell you a lot about how the race unfolds, and that alone invaluable, like the conversation we had with Nick Tamaro going over all the paces. Going to close out these last 15 minutes or so with Bill Pascrell and with Dallas Baker. And been looking forward to this because ever since the spring, when word came from Dennis Drazen that a deal was being inked with betmakers from Australia to establish a system for fixed odds wagering. And we've been clamoring for this in North America for ages. There's so many positives, and it seems like it really is at hand this time. And Bill's helping from a legal standpoint and working with Trenton to get the legalities done. And Dallas Baker doing everything else. Dallas, good morning.
Can I say thanks for having us on?
Not at all. And Bill, that drive from Oceanport to Trenton, they should have an easy pass lane for you.
Steve, thank you for having us on. It's indeed an honor to be in your midst, and I thank you for the privilege to be able to speak with you this morning.
We'll probably do more of this, but I did want, with the news that kind of may have gotten lost over the weekend, I wanted people to understand what's going on in here. And Dallas, give just an overview of the fixed odds concept, and then I want Bill to explain, what has to happen in Trenton to get this thing basically off the ground.
Well, I think overall, Steve, is that the overall benefits that it has for the industry, and that's for the for not just the funding, but for the people who are actively involved in it every day, as in the people gambling on the event, which provides a different method of betting, and in my opinion, a more exciting method of betting, which is fixed odds. When we deregulated the online wagering operator market in Australia, which is the same sort of
Oh boy. Well, Bill,
we listened.
Yeah, we did. That's always the sound. He sounded good with the Australian phone, but Bill, I'll get Dallas back to explain some of the nuts and bolts. But
sure.
You guys were you were hopeful before the Monmouth season started. I had a conversation with Dennis. As the meet was about to get going, that you might have been able to get this across and in place. I think I understand what delayed it. I mean, there was some terms elements. Is this a sports bet or is this a paramutual bet? Give us an idea of what was dealt with and how it was resolved and how it's going forward.
Sure. And Steve, by the way, our good mate, Dallas Baker's in New Jersey. He's been living here since he arrived in Valentine's Day in February. We've been sorting out his visa and all, but what a great partner he is. I met Tom Buckingham, Steve, the CEO of Betmakers in Barcelona last year, where I was speaking at the World Gaming Executive Conference on U.S. sports betting because of all the work that Dennis Drazen and I have done to get that launched and to defeat PASPA. But, the most amazing statement, and it's going to be very pedestrian for you and perhaps most of your viewers, but it was very impactful to me, Steve. When I got off that stage and Todd Kilmorin introduced himself, I thought it was another bloody bloke that was going to chew my ear off and nothing would happen. But he started to explain to me that he came to Barcelona to listen to me speak and to ultimately see if I'd be interested in working with them. And then he gave me some facts and figures about fixed odds. And when you look at the U.S. horse racing industry, and it's such a legendary, wonderful industry. My granddad, Bill Pasquale Sr., who was a trainsman, used to take me to the track when I was a little lad. God rest his soul, he passed away several years ago at the age of 98. But, I have a little bit of experience with horse racing, not a great amount. Certainly can't hold a candle to you. But when Todd explained to me that there's 330 million Americans and we do just around $10 billion a year in the parimutuel tote betting system, and yet Australia has less than 25 million, to be exact, 24.6 million, and they're doing close to 30 billion Aussie dollars, which is, just a little over $24 billion with a far less population. And the differential is the last 10 years, since fixed odds has been launched, it's certainly an offering that is very interesting to the younger gamer. We know that sports betting in America took a bit of a dive early on in the year because of COVID, but now that content is back up and running, we had a tremendous month in August where New Jersey alone, which is now the third largest online gaming jurisdiction in the globe, did just under $700 million in bet without NFL.
Wow.
And in September, we tripling that into $748 million bets in the month of September with only 20 days of NFL. And so I believe that this is going to be extraordinarily attractive to the younger gamers, the 20 and 30-year-olds, who don't really have a lot of experience. Some do, but most don't, with offerings the tracks.
Sure.
And I've seen multiple times, Steve, in the last 5 to 10 years that I've been representing Dennis at Monmouth Park and the Meadowlands up in Bergen County, many young folks will place a $10 bet on a 7-to-1 horse, you know, about 15 minutes before the race.
Yeah.
And the horse is sitting there wondering why they only got $3, you know,
$30.
Absolutely. So the fixed odds offering, our challenge has been to launch, right? We did that great announcement, Steve, which you were kind enough to mention on your show on February 4th when Todd and I were in London at the ICE conference, and Dennis was back at Oceanport, and we signed that deal that night. Betmaker stock exploded. And that shows in and of itself an independent, objective way to measure this. Betmakers is well-positioned to be the best of breed and to continue that great tradition that they started in Australia in the U.S. But we've had an attorney general's office in New Jersey. We have a great attorney general who has been a little bit more methodical. You know, in 2018 and 19, both at the Haskell and the Hamiltonian, the state of New Jersey allowed fixed odds bets. Now, it was a very pedestrian offering because it wasn't marketed. You know, nobody knew it was around.
No.
But we have been fortunate, but also because of Dennis Drazen's integrity and Betmaker's integrity through the leadership of Todd in Dallas, we wanted to do this the right way, not just casually go into it. And so we've been working with the regulators. They've come back with an AG opinion that said it's a sports bet. Now, we happen to disagree with that, but rather than challenging it, we decided to go the route of a real law that will embrace fixed odds, will put the regulatory regime in place, and fix it as a horse bet. Extraordinarily important, Steve, to the industry. The industry is dying on the vine. It's had a little bit of a rebirth this year, but you know the paramutual system's almost cannibalizing itself. This will stabilize the paramutual system, and it will bring more money into the market, create jobs. I mean, Betmakers has raised a significant amount of money just for the U.S. operation, which Dallas and his good mate, the new U.S. General Counsel, are working on to set up their headquarters here.
Hey, let me a couple of quick points, and because I don't want to get too bogged down. But you said the key element in here, Bill, and I think and Dallas is back with us. But the dragging point that delayed the approvals was the determination by the AG's office whether this was going to be treated as a sports bet or a paramutual wager as a horse bet, and it sure seemed, based on what Dennis was saying in the spring, that it was better for everybody, and it was going to be, you know, better for the purse accounts and better for the player, better for the track, the horseman, if this was treated as a horse wager and a paramutual wager as opposed to a sports bet where the margin structure was going to be less advantageous. Do you sense that it's going to go the way that, you know, that would be best for the industry?
Yeah, and I'll be very brief, Stephen. I'm sorry, there's so much. I'm very excited about this conversation. It's important to move the dial forward. So let me just be clear. Dallas came over in the early part of the year, back in February, as I mentioned, when we lost him for a few moments. When he came over from Australia to put a stake in the ground here, and he and I and Dennis met with the Racing Commission, Judy Mason. We met with Dave Reebok, the Division of Gaming Enforcement Commission. We met with the governor's office. Everything was moving, getting sorted, and we were excited to launch it in May. Prior to the May launch, COVID hit, right? You know, the opening of the meet at Monmouth. COVID has had a significant impact on the cadence and the movement of this. But alternatively, we believe that we've been fortunate in this regard. We could have easily launched as a sports set. I'm pretty confident we could have done that. We want to get this right, get it right, because there's no sense in launching as a sports bet and then passing a law and then maneuvering it to a horse bet. There's all kinds of issues that could be involved in that. So I'm going to break news to you today. Alice and Todd and Dennis are aware of this, but I got a commitment yesterday from the Senate leadership that this bill was going to move fast. I have a personal commitment from the governor of New Jersey I also have a commitment from the speaker who I have to meet with, who wants to understand it more, that they all know that this has to move quickly. But the Senate president yesterday told me he was keen to move this quickly, and I didn't know what he meant until I got a call this morning and let Todd and Dallas and Dennis know. It's going to be up in the Senate Budget Committee on Monday, which is roughly 10 days after it was introduced. Obviously, the state is closed today. That's, to me, that shows the commitment of the leadership of the state. Betmakers, Dennis Drazen, are working very hard with me collaboratively behind the scenes to show that hearing at 1 o'clock on Monday in Trenton, which will be live, which I will be testifying at, and it'll be our first chance kind of through that committee tell the world, or at least the U.S., how powerful and important this tool is to not only stabilize horse racing, but to expand it and to make sure that all the stakeholders are treated fairly and properly and are allowed to stay in business.
Tremendous. Bill Pascrell III with us, and Dallas Baker. And, of course, Bill has been involved for a period now with Dennis and with Monmouth, representing them, and now with Bet Makers. And Dallas, just a couple of minutes to fill in, but a lot of nice things have happened in addition to this project moving forward. A 3-year tie-in, Bet Makers, the Bet Makers Bonanza, which was a clever offer that Authentic actually eligible for, having won the Derby, the Haskell, and now with the potential to sweep and win the Breeders' Cup Classic. You're going to do this for this is the first of 3 years, and in a deal. Give us a couple of quick other points that BetMakers is positioning as you really establish a presence in North America.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exciting that in the first year that we've actually got it up and running and live. So yeah, basically the winner, we put it up. It was Dennis Drazen's idea, which we jumped on supporting it, where the winner of the Haskell into the Derby, and then if it was to go on to win the Longines Classic, then gets an extra $1 million. So we're cheering long and hard for Authentic to hopefully pull off the first year of the bonus. It'll, as you mentioned, it'll be going for 3 years, but with obviously a different calendar next year. The middle part of it is yet to be determined, but it'll start with the Haskell at Monmouth, finish with the Breeders' Cup, and to work out what's in the middle part of that. But
oh no! I think Case, we lost Alice again. I think we did.
It's those Australian phones in America.
I think it's time. I think it's time to get him. You've got to get him a burner phone or something.
I love it.
An old-fashioned desk phone. Well, you know what? We're gonna end up against the clock here. And Bill, I'll get Dallas back. And it sounds like you may have things that close to the goal line, this quickly. One question I was going to ask for him that I'll throw to you to wrap up. The contribution to the purses, how does this differ versus, the typical, strata, the contribution and percentages. If there's a dollar in the paramutual system, maybe anywhere from 3 to 7% makes its way to the racetrack and to the purses. How is that structure when it comes to the fixed odds?
Yeah, Steve, that's a great question. The most important thing to note here is nothing can happen without the approval of each jurisdiction's horse and the tracks that are feeding, the satellite, the simulcast. So nothing can happen without the approvals of all the various stakeholders, number one. Number two, there is a little bit of an education curve when it comes to the purse support from fixed odds versus paramutual. Paramutual has a much greater percentage, but they don't have as much activity. So the take on each individual transaction for the track is a little bit smaller in percentage-wise.
Right.
However, you're getting a smaller percentage of a greater number, which we're quite confident is just going to explode the PERS system. Which is important, as you know, to attract customers.
Sure, and that, you know, that has been the talking point from day one, and you know, the concerns always were for things like the exchange wagering markets. You know, the idea was, well, it's a smaller percentage, and but if it was going to bring new bettors, if it was going to motivate people to, you know, to play, it had the potential to have incremental volume, and you know, this is a little more complex just because we don't know what it would mean versus the parimutuel market, and you know, we're going to run out of time, but it's a conversation we'll have. You know, Dallas is back. Next time we're together, Dallas, you can really talk about what went on in Australia and New Zealand with TAB, because it was a concern a decade ago, and it was alleviated, and it's worked very, very well. So it is something I definitely want to visit, but in the meantime, looking forward not just to Saturday. Here's a chance for bet makers to really have a bonanza with Authentic and his chance to sweep a third leg of the Betmakers Bonanza. And we also are going to be pleased to have the Betmakers Breeders' Cup betting guide, essentially, companion for everybody tomorrow. Dallas, sorry we had trouble with you, but we'll get you back soon.
I've got one of those desk phones working now, so I don't know what was happening there. Everything seemed right. I just think the main salient point is, and I in between dropping out, I'm not too sure if it was made, the proof was really in the pudding. You know, I think when fixed odds was being deregulated, the opponents of it thought the sky was going to fall down, it was going to cruel a lot of the other pools. But in reality, in the 10-year period, we've seen betting handle double, the totes pretty much stay the same, but that growth come from fixed odds betting. But most importantly, and this is where the industry benefits, is in that time, returns to owners through PERS returns has doubled commensurately as well too. That's
wow.
The similar model that we're bringing in. So, you know, that's what we want to, when it comes into to actually operation, rather than we're talking around in theories at the moment, I'm sure that pathway is going to be what's seen here. And that's the ultimate thing, and that's how we'll ultimately be judged on. When you see those purse levels rising and those returns filtering back to everybody involved in the industry, that's where we'll say that this is a success.
This was
and that's
a,
where we're
a success.
Ultimately confident yep. that it's going to be.
Well, Dallas, very excited, and we'll keep everybody apprised. And Bill Pasquarelle, take care of them in Trenton. Keep them on the straight and narrow. Enjoy Breeders' Cup. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you very much. Sorry about dropping out there.
Not at all. Thanks. Dallas Baker and Bill Pasquarelle III and Betmakers Bonanza. Hopefully our betting companion will be a bonanza for everybody. And back tomorrow, another full 3 hours, including Sid Fernando and much, much more. The long shot lad, Kev Humphreys, tomorrow. And probably a lot of international participant conversation. I think maybe Nick Luck tomorrow. Nick, sometimes Thursday. We'll see. I haven't talked to him yet. He got in just ahead of the draw yesterday. Finally, hope everybody is voted or is going to vote, and hope that things go well for our nation collectively. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three. Coming to you from Keeneland. Now just really 2.5